Hey, everybody. Fantastic episode of The Morning Show. We are joined by NFT Statistics to talk all things Ethereum NFTs, Bitcoin Ordinals, and his new position working with Memeland. We're also joined by Tony V from Shrapnel, our official gaming partner with Bodagos, and we talk about their playtest that's going live today. We talk about their presence at GDC and all updates from Shrapnel, including their marketplace launch. You can learn more following Shrapnel on Twitter. That's at PlayShrapnel. You can also go to thenifty.com/Shrapnel to buy an extraction pack and get involved. Hope you enjoy the show. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Choose Rich podcast. We're choosing rich every single time, regardless of what the crypto prices are saying. Today, we have a lot to discuss. We're going to discuss the Sutton Base, that's a base chain, Coinbase's little side chain, meme coin mania that happened literally overnight, quite literally overnight. And then we are going to be joined, or at least we're joined with by him now, NFT Statistics, friend of the show, Sam. He's got a new job. We're excited to hear about it. Wow, he set the balloons off with that hand motion. Very, very cool stuff. And we're going to talk all things ETH NFTs, Ordinals, and about his new position working at Memeland at 9GAG. Sam, how you doing this morning, man?
What's up, PO? Always good to be here.
Hell yeah. I mean, we're pumped to have you. I was trying to book you like a month ago while you were going through the job transition. And you were like, yo, like, you know, now's not a good time. I was like, oh shit, like, you know, something must be going on with Sam. Congratulations on the new job, man.
Someone call Nick, man. We got some breaking news. Get Nick on the phone.
Well, look, we'll just get to diving in here. Today's show, ladies and gentlemen, is brought to you in partnership with Shrapnel. Shrapnel is the first-person shooter game on AVAX, an official gaming partner of Bodagos. Today, Shrapnel is launching STX 2.0, which will also include the launch of their highly anticipated marketplace. So the marketplace launch means that you'll be able to buy Shrapnel weapon skins starting with 20 different options on the marketplace using the Shrap token, which was also, by the way, just listed on crypto.com. So to participate in STX 2.0 and complete quests to win skins and also place on the leaderboard, all you need is to buy an extraction pack. You can buy that at thenifty.com/shrapnel. Clemente will make sure, I'm sure he'll pin that, show it on the YouTube stream. That is thenifty.com/shrapnel. Clemente, did you want to run the weather report today or did you want me to do it?
I can run it. Real quick on all things Shrapnel, PO. Bodagos, if you're a Bodagos holder, we're going to have some interesting coming your way. So stay tuned. And also, if you completed some quests, I believe you're going to be getting some stuff here. So a lot of interesting stuff. It's a big week for Shrapnel. We're going to be talking to Tony this afternoon or later on in the show, but I will take us through this weather report in just a second. Let me just prep here. PO going to stall slightly as I share my screen. I'm going to try to pull off the impossible here.
Oh, he's going
to
share his screen and do the weather report. I'm curious here.
No. I'm stepping this up here. Here we go. Let me, and I'm not going to try to go too loud with the music. And we are live. Welcome to the weather report. Over the last 24 hours, we have ETH market volume coming in at 18 million. Solana market volume at 11 million. ETH volume really slowing down here. On ETH, we have Miladies up 22% to 4.2 ETH. Lil Pudgy's up 14% to 0.95 ETH. Azuki up 6% to 4 ETH. We're back, baby. Let's go. Over on Solana, Fergana up 55% to 3.1. Parcel up 44%. Mutantmon up 32%. And on Bitcoin, Runestone's cooking up 52% to an all-time high. Natcat's up 32%. We're up all over the place. Maybe this crypto pullback wasn't so bad after all. Over the past 24 hours, we got Jack Butcher. He's back, baby. OPEPIN 2.0 is live, and it saw 142 sets launched for community curation. And Jack Butcher, instead of him being the creator, version 2.0 allows for community members to both submit and vote on sets, which then become official OPEPIN sets, as we are seeing here. Pretty awesome stuff, and the market seemed to like it. OPEPIN's up from 0.22 to 0.31 overnight. And the next story, we got XCopy. He dropped Mutatio. This is a little fly. This is a 24-hour open edition on base for a mint price of $3. The NFT is a 3D rendered fly with the trademark X on it. You can move it around, play with it. They've already, 280,000 have already been minted, raising over 500K. XCopy cashing in once again. Let's go, baby. continue to make that cash. Institutional investment giant BlackRock Capital has filed with the SEC for the USD Institutional Digital Liquidity Fund with plans to invest in tokenized real-world assets. And a wallet speculated to belong to the fund saw a deposit of 100 million USDC. And you guessed it, crypto degens started sending a bunch of tokens, including $6,000 worth of MOG and several other ETH NFTs. And lastly, it looks like the crypto bloodbath, the panic seems to have stabilized, but Bitcoin got as low as $61,000, Ethereum at $3,070. If you had buy orders placed in at those prices, you woke up to some sweet, sweet cash this morning. They're up 7 to 10% off their local bottoms. Bitcoin up to $64,000, Ethereum at $3,300. And that's it for the weather report. Pio, back over to you.
Interesting weather report, Clemente. As usual, the Daily Bone newsletter is emailed every morning to everyone that subscribes at dailybones.com. Here are the top stories from that newsletter. Bitcoin puppets derivative Little Pups mint for around $20. They ran to a 0.0045 Bitcoin floor on over $1 million worth of volume before pulling back. Not exactly a story that I care about, but Clemente led with it in the newsletter today. Solana-based Peppermint's bot was able to snipe the launch of pre-sale token Shroom, buying $2.4 million worth of tokens and flipping them for $10.3 million within minutes. Only in this industry can you pull something like that off after everybody said that it was all over. PerpDex Wasabi announced a partnership with Thruster, that will allow fractionalization of Blastopians, enabling staking and instant liquidity for one of Blast's top NFT collections. Professional Degen number 5 by OSF minted out the last 20% of supply in a gas war, with successful minters paying upwards of 0.03 Ethereum in gas fees for the free mint, which is now trading at 0.028 Ethereum. Surprised to see him put that out on Ethereum layer one. Interesting move. Next story, artist Ghostface Killah of the Wu-Tang Clan announced he is dropping new music on Bitcoin via a 10,000 supply free mint, giving holders CCO rights to the tracks. We'll have to see how this plays out. French Montana, I saw, is doing something similar, a new trend of celebrity musicians dropping music on Bitcoin. I would have not predicted that 2 years ago. Let me tell you that. Last story, Rug Radio announces Content Plus, which is a platform that rewards users with merchandise and an upcoming token for engaging and interacting with Rug Radio and Decrypt Media content. So shout out to our pals over there at Rug Radio. Very interesting story there. Content Plus, name of the platform. So look, we're going to get cooking here. Clemente had written this call sheet as if Sam wasn't going to already be here, but he's here. Sam, what's going on? And this is NFT stats, ladies and gentlemen. What is going on with the NFT market in general? I mean, if I kind of recap the last few months, as soon as liquidity kind of came back to crypto in a major way, when everybody picked up on the fact that the ETF was going to be approved. So first, a bunch of capital plowed into Bitcoin, and then plowed into some other coins like Solana, like AVAX, like Say. And then, of course, the last area of crypto to gain liquidity, meme coins too, I should mention. But then the last area of crypto as expected to gain liquidity was NFTs. And we saw some pretty crazy runs on NFTs. We saw Pudgy Penguins run from 5 or 6 ETH all the way up to 20 plus, flipping Bored Apes, this, that, and the other thing. Saw some other action on some other projects in the NFT space. But now all of a sudden, it's like the NFT liquidity has been completely wiped out. So what do you make of what's going on here?
I think, NFT liquidity is not, I kind of see NFTs as JPEGs, right? Like people buying a JPEG, and that is not dead, because you're seeing ordinals are popping off right now. That's just the narrative of the day.
Huge CryptoPunk sale. CryptoPunk sale not long ago too, right?
Big CryptoPunk sale, but CryptoPunks are holding their own. You know, like CryptoPunks have been in this like 45 to 60 ETH range for like 2 years. And that hasn't changed at all. Node monkeys are popping off, puppets, quantum cats. Like you have a lot of collections in the JPEG game that are doing very, very well. We're just seeing ETH NFTs, ETH NFTs completely tank across the board. And I think you have a couple things. One is, I think a lot of those brands, a lot of the ETH NFT brands are pretty stale. You know, I think I would say NFTs are like nightclubs. Like, they're fun for a while, but you don't like, they're hard to invest in over a long period of time, right? Because over time, something cool that's new pops up and no one's waiting in line for the other one. And I feel like NFT brands are kind of similar. It's very hard in this game. And it's not just NFTs. It's also meme coins. Like, people are comparing the best performing NFTs of 2 years ago to the best performing meme coin of today. And that is an impossible comparison. If we look at meme coins or other shit coins that popped off 2 years ago, they're also worth nothing. But everyone's like, why can't Bored Apes be like Bohm? Well, it's like Bohm is like the one of a million that popped off in the past week, or the five of a million. And even that starts to fade. So, you know, these are all just attention objects. It's very hard to maintain attention. And something I know Clemente wants to talk about, that I have talked about for over a year, is the fact that incentivized bidding, paying people hundreds of millions of dollars to bid as high as possible on shit they have zero interest in holding, over time creates a supply transfer from real holders to flippers. And as soon as that happens, other real holders realize they have to get out as soon as possible before the next dump happens, and it starts to feed on itself. And I'm a big fan of a lot that Blur's done, but I continue to think that from an economics market perspective, paying people hundreds of millions of dollars to bid on shit they have zero interest in holding would destroy any collectible. And I think it's a constant headwind against ETH NFTs that will be there, that's very hard to overcome. And it's not impossible. You saw Pudgy Penguins pop off for a while. You've seen Milady kind of hang in there despite it, but even Milady can't pump under any condition. It just stays under 4 or 5 ETH no matter what. So I don't know. I think that's a constant headwind in the marketplace right now.
Clemente, do you have any follow-up questions on that? I mean, that is an interesting mechanic that this market has baked in right now. Clemente?
Yeah, I've been watching the ETH NFTs on Magic Eden actually pretty closely, and comparing that volume, because that's pretty much all organic because they're enforcing royalties now. And what you saw with most of them is, well, they all took a 30-40% haircut like the ones on Blur. But what you're seeing now with like Utes and Creeps is, I realize that an NFT collection pretty much should only have maybe 20 sales max per day, right? Like in a day-to-day world, no one person, like NFTs are extremely illiquid, and I think that's kind of a feature. But Blur kind of took that away by trying to maximize it. So I've been watching like Sappy Seals, for example, Sam, and they ran up, they grinded up from like 0.7 all the way to 0.9 on like, 30 sales per day. And it was slowly gotten up there, and then it got up to 0.9, and a farmer just dumped 30 of them. And then you just saw a hot potato of like the farmers that got dumped on, dumping on other ones until those 30 got redistributed within new holders, like organic buyers, basically. So it's just like a game of hot potato. But anyways, I'm curious, have you been tracking the performance of royalty enforcing NFTs and how they've done comparatively speaking? For example, am watching very closely Utes versus D-Gods because it's pretty much the perfect case study to compare the two.
Well, I think that, and sorry if my mic sounds weird. I'm getting
a couple of sounds there. You're good.
I think that Magic Eden stuff is also set up to fail right now. I think a lot of people are sitting there saying like, hey, well, Magic Eden's not doing it. I'm like, guys, you're asking people, a buyer base, to move to an exchange they've never used before for projects they've never bought there before. And like, no ETH users ever use Magic Eden. And Coda is saying the only way you can buy it, like, I naturally, when I wake up in the morning, I type Blur. Like, it's just what my fingers do when I get to my computer. And that's every buyer. So now you're saying the only place you can buy these NFTs is a platform that you've never, ever used to buy ETH NFTs, everybody. So yes, all that shit is going to do terrible. Like, and that is what is happening right now. Like Coda, Mythics, Utes, Quirkies, like they're all doing terribly. And I think that's just because habits need to get built for people to get used to that. I agree with you though. I think like royalty enforcement, this process of everybody selling into these people who are instant flippers, and those instant flippers are getting paid hundreds of millions of dollars to bid more for that NFT than anyone thinks it's worth. Like that process, it just facilitates a transfer of supply from real holders. Eventually they're going to keep bidding until real holders sell. That's the nature of the incentive structure, is if no one's selling, you'd keep bidding higher, and eventually real holders are going to sell. And then suddenly, but the problem is that once it happens, you said in a tweet yesterday, it takes a month or two to work through. It's actually the opposite. It never ends, because the minute that Hanwei owns 100, the minute that Machi owns 100, you have to sell. If you're a holder, you have to sell because you know that Machi is going to sell 100 and you have to get ahead of that. So the amount of NFTs in that group grows bigger and bigger and bigger, and it actually gets worse, not better, constantly. And there's no price, because one thing I always say is NFTs aren't priced based on numbers. They're priced based on how much supply and demand you think is out there. And if a Chromie Squiggle is listed at 5 ETH, but there are 100 listed at 5 ETH, you're never going to buy one. If there's one listed at 7, but the second cheapest is listed at 10, you're going to buy it. Because your perception of supply and demand. Okay, I'd rather buy one at 7 if the next cheapest is at 10, then buy one at 5 if there are 100 listed at 5. And anytime Machi owns 100 of any NFT, or anytime Hanwei, or anytime CBB owns 100, you know that there are 100 listed at the floor, only they're hiding it and they're going to pounce you. So I think there's that. I think people started seeing what you said about Sappy Seals, where 30 get dumped, they say, fuck it, I'm out of this game. Like this, I'm not an insider, I'm going to get dumped on. And it just removed people. And we've seen that. Like there just aren't that many people trading on Blur. They have fewer users now than they had in November, the month they started.
I felt that 100%, Sam. I had two Sappy Seals. Both of them were staked. And I was sitting there about a month ago or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, and Sappy Seals had gotten down to like one ETH. And I was sitting there and I was looking at the bidders. And I just watched someone get, I'm assuming it was one of the big bidders, just get like 20 to 30 dumped on him. And I was saying like, okay, I just need to get rid of one. I sold one at one ETH and I just bought it back this morning or yesterday for 0.7.
Yeah.
But I felt terrible about it. I literally just want to hold this thing forever, but it's so bad when you buy something for one ETH and then the next day it just gets giga dumped on. It takes away the fun experience of it. And I'm kind of on the boat. I'm curious what you think. As a user, I'm like, I don't mind paying a 5% royalty. Literally is just an organic tax, which means that I can like look at this in a proper way. I'm being able to look at the real buyers and sellers versus it being incentivized.
Yeah, no, it's I'm with you. I know Pio's not with us on this one, but I'm.
What do you mean I'm not with you on this one?
I'm mad. I'm huge. I have a lot of my money in Blast. I use Blend a lot. I think that Blend, along with Price Lock on TensorSwap, are the two best NFT fi innovations of the year. I currently have over 100 ETH lent out on Blend against NFTs. So I'm not like anti-Blur. I think what you're saying is true. I think that the economics and marketplace dynamic of paying people hundreds of millions of dollars to bid on shit they have zero interest in holding is just extremely destructive. And we've seen it in Punks too, because Punks had a stretch where it was farmed and then a stretch where it's not. Like right now it's not farmed at all because there's no volume on wrapped Punks. And the result is you've had stability. Like you just have not had the pump and dump cycle that we're like, Punks were in the vortex and somehow like the volume just shifted back to Larva Labs and things improved. So I've been talking about this for over a year. It's probably my most divisive view. But again, it's not like a Blur hating. It's just economically, this has been a very surprising outcome, but it's an unprecedented experiment. I don't think there's any marketplace out there in the world where people get paid hundreds of millions of dollars to lose money flipping shit. Like in futures markets, you know, I sat on a trading floor at Goldman Sachs for 8 years. In a futures market, you know, they will reward you for volume by removing your fees. They will never pay you to lose money on shit. And that's what's happening here is people are getting paid to lose money on shit. So they overbid, they dump at losses, and everybody else has to get out. And that doodle over there, I don't even own that doodle anymore. I don't own it anymore because I was going to buy, I have three kids. I wanted to own three doodles. I owned one and I was going to go buy two more, one for my, you know, one in honor of each of my kids. And as I was about to buy, someone dumped 100. So I sold mine. It turns buyers into sellers. That's kind of just the nature of this process.
Fair. Well, I want to get to ordinals, but before we do, we've been talking a lot about the short-term activity being negative in the NFT side of the market. However, if you look at the past year plus, it's actually been pretty damn positive for some of the most notable collections, right? So you look at Pudgy Penguins, you look at Camp High Pandas, you look at Bodagos, and if you look at the bottom of those projects during the bear market versus where they're at now, really just call it from last summer until now, it's been a pretty robust pump. And yes, there's a pullback now, but I mean, I remember Camp High Pandas being at like 0.6 Ethereum. I remember Pudgy Penguins being at 3 Ethereum. I remember Bodago's being at 1 or 2 Solana. And so it's a different situation now. Crypto appreciating and the NFTs appreciating in crypto terms, you know, in the face of that appreciation. What do you make of the kind of longer term view, both over the past year and over the next year?
Like overall, the 1 year move has been destructive. Like ETH NFTs have gotten absolutely crushed. The way I describe this, like if you look at the broad picture, the way I describe this is it is a headwind. Like it is not a, clearly if Pudgy Penguins are, if there are rumors of a token, which would easily be billions of dollars, like yes, like a project can pump 100%. You know, I think the best example is Miladies, but where they've just kind of held in there despite being heavily farmed. But I like, look, like Azuki for the first five months of incentivized bidding, Azuki kept a floor at 17 ETH. They went from 11 to 17 because the anticipation of the Vegas event was so strong that it overpowered this headwind. But the minute things turn south, it's over. Like it's extremely unforgiving. So I call it, like I say it's a headwind. I mean, D-Gods also, D-Gods moved over to ETH and they weren't as heavily farmed. They didn't have the big pump where everything dumps into farms. And they did really, really well until season three happened. And then season three happened and someone dumped 250 and it's over. So I say it's a big headwind. If you look at a broad index of NFTs, they've done poorly. But yeah, something like Pudgy's like overcame it. And I think like Pudgy's were like the object of FOMO. And certainly the leverage in the system can also work the other direction. It can also like increase short-term pumps pretty well. And we saw that in Pudgy's. Compi Pandas. I mean, I think the fact that you're calling out Compi Pandas is a great example. Like a year and a half ago, if something hit a 2.8 ETH floor, like we wouldn't even be, it wouldn't even make it to the Nifty Portal show. It would not make, and here we're saying, but Compi Pandas, oh wait, what are they at? They're 2.15 ETH?
Yeah.
And we're saying this is an example of success because it's so hard to do well in this event. Like, yeah, and like hats off to everything those guys have done. But if you actually look at like the indexes, it like even the stuff that's doing well, like Sappy Seals, Compi Pandas, Milady, they can't even gather on what.
I understand what you're saying, but I do feel like is there not a discussion that needs to happen about the execution side of this market? Because
100%. God. I mean,
you just got a job at Nine Guy at Memeland, and you know, Ray obviously is, I think, perceived by many as a strong executor, right? I mean, at the end of the day, like it's an actual company that's been around for a decade, and he's done a good job with you know, the NFT collections. When you look at some of these other projects, I won't name names to like, you know, not call people out, but when you kind of look at the whole NFT market, over 50% have had poor execution slash been literally a scam, right? I mean,
I just worked at a project. Like the amount of money I lost at Moonbirds because I owned two Moonbirds that I didn't feel comfortable selling because I worked there. I lost more money in those than I made in my 401k in over a year. Look, I've been at projects that I think really struggled with execution. When I make this point of and paying people hundreds of millions of dollars to bid on shit that they have zero interest in holding, you're not even paying them to buy it. You're just paying them to bid on stuff. So much so that they all build bots so that the second they might have to buy, they pull out their bid, right? That is a destructive mechanism does not mean that Moonbirds failed to execute. That does not mean that Bored Ape Yacht Club failed to execute. It does not mean that these projects failed to execute. Both of those things can exist at the same time. Like, yes, these projects have really not lived up to the hype that was around them. And paying people tons of money to bid on shit they don't want to own is destructive. Both those things can be true at the same time. And I think like, but you know, Azuki, D-Gods, but every single one of these brands has just been destroyed. And I don't think any of these brands are ruggers. I don't think any of these brands are like con artists. I think these are just brands where like all the brands that were hot a year and a half ago have gone to nothing. With the exception of Pudgy Penguins, like I said, a few others are hanging in there. But I think both those things can be true at the same time. Like, yes, this is a terrible economic incentive structure that's really bad for any collectible asset. And a lot of these projects have failed to execute. Like both those things are true.
Fair. Just to reinforce my point, then we'll move on. I don't think that we should take, you know, these projects existing in the world and having buyers as a given. I suppose, is the point that I'm trying to make, in the sense that it's really, really, really hard to make a successful business, a successful startup of any sort. And that is what you're dealing with here. It's not easy to just will the next Pokemon or the next Mickey Mouse into existence. So I think that's the part that I'm kind of bringing up, is that we shouldn't take it as a given that Project XYZ is going to have $5 million of volume a week, I guess, is the point that I'm trying to make.
Of course. No, like I said, like, it's very hard to make JPEGs expensive for a long period of time. Like, there is no question about that. Like, I think that that can totally exist side by side with the fact that, just from an economics perspective, from a market's perspective, paying people hundreds of millions of dollars to bid on shit they have zero interest in holding is also destructive.
Yeah.
Like, but I think that they're both true. It's been a very unforgiving. This environment, like, just is extremely unforgiving. And I think it keeps going. Like, I think there is no bottom as long as this structure is in place and you don't work out that supply, because I think every holder has to dump. Like, when you see the amount that airdrop farmers hold, and it's a vortex, because then they end up owning more. Until the money stops going their way for buying stuff they don't want to own, I really have a hard time getting excited about them.
Clemente, was there a follow-up you want?
Yep. Do you feel like, Blur teased, and it's kind of expected, they're going to be launching on Blast. I don't know what the level of integration of that looks like, but then you also have potentially Wasabi integrating like fractionalized NFTs, under the assumption that we see ETH NFTs get fractionalized or basically have gasless transactions via Blast. Again, let's just assume that for a second. I was under the expectation, right? And my prediction was once Blur launches on Blast, it's going to get really interesting for ETH NFTs. We might see like a hundred million of volume every single day, but it's like, is that even good? Like, I remember you responded to one of my tweets, like, that's not even necessarily a measure of an indicator of success anymore, because we could have 100 million in volume, but if it's all trading between farmers, to you, from what you're saying, is it needs to be a change in incentive. And do you feel like Pac-Man has any incentive to change his incentive structure?
I don't think like financialization has been around forever. Like, this idea that somehow financialization is new is ridiculous. Like, NFTFi was doing tens of millions of dollars of loans before Blur existed. You know, we've had fractionalization platforms up the wazoo forever. Like, none of that stuff's a problem. The only thing I think is a problem is paying people to lose money. Like, if stuff gets fractionalized, like, and it creates more liquidity, like, great. People are
going to buy stuff. I love the fractionalization thing, because it's the same thing as stocks. Like, at the end of the day, if I can get actual safe fractionalization, and when I say safe, I mean that I know that the counterparty is not going to like go under. Like, you know, for example, when I buy a fractional share on the Robinhood app of some stock, I'm not worried about whether Robinhood is going to still exist tomorrow. If I can get a way to get a fractionalized CryptoPunk and I can just basically dollar cost average into a CryptoPunk, that's very interesting to me.
Totally. No, this whole idea that liquidity started here, like, we have more liquidity in 2021 than we do now, like, by far. Like, you know, when CryptoPunks were heavily traded on Blur, you had fewer NFTs actually trade than you did the 6 months prior. Like, didn't actually, it was just the same one traded 100 times. So it was fake liquidity, right? Like, but the idea that financialization is a problem, I just think is wrong. Like, because it's been around forever. The stuff, the single aspect that's a problem is paying people tons of money to lose money.
Yeah.
So that they're buying stuff that they're willing to take losses on. But in fractionalization, you buy stuff you think is going to go up. That's like a good market mechanism. That's normal trading behavior for asset classes. The stuff that's not normal is paying people to lose money. That's the stuff that throws things out. So I don't think any of this stuff is, I think it's much less new than people think. I think somehow people call it efficient. I think it's the least efficient market I've ever seen, because people are getting paid to make the wrong price on stuff, which is to me the idea of inefficiency. But financialization, like, the market's had it forever. The market's had liquidity forever. None of that stuff, I think, is a problem. I think that, you know, it's just about, like I said, I've said the same thing over and over. I can ramble about this shit forever. You guys keep asking me questions.
We're going to move on to ordinals, because
where you don't have this dynamic, place where literally on Magic Eden, if you're going to buy an ordinal, you're paying a little fee and you're only buying if you think it's going to go up, and you're not getting paid to bid on shit you don't want. And like, I think it's a much healthier market.
And so I'm a huge Bitcoin guy. I think it was like, when I got in NFTs, I viewed it as a foregone conclusion that somehow NFTs were going to end up on Bitcoin to some capacity. Then Ordinals came out. They had their white hot moment that they then cooled off and everyone said they were, quote, dead. And now, obviously, look at that. The cream rises to the top. And, you know, Ordinals is one of the most significant verticals within the NFT market. What do you make of the action that we see on Ordinals right now, Sam? You're muted, buddy.
Look, I think Ordinals like at the end of the day, I think these objects are very similar. It's like, do people start feeling connection to a JPEG, to a collectible, and like feel that FOMO? Like I felt a lot of Node Monkey FOMO. I'm not gonna lie. Like it's working on me, and I think that the narrative of the Node Monkeys as like the oldest, one of the first project that got crowned as like relevant in the Bitcoin ecosystem, like perhaps that has legs, you know, and perhaps that the question with all these things is like, what's going to make these things relevant in 1 to 2 years? And I think like Node Monkeys has a decent narrative forming around that. I think all of these have like nice little communities going on. They're delivering the single best utility that any crypto asset can deliver, which is number go up. Like these are momentum based assets. People get FOMO as price goes up. They lose FOMO as price goes down. So I think like Ordinals is in that sweet spot of having a good narrative, having positive momentum right now. And then the other thing is that all these like DeFi projects and all these like future projects, seem to be dropping, like doing their airdrops to people who have owned these assets for a long time. So there's a bit of a flywheel going on right now where the narrative is just humming. So, I don't think it is structurally all that different from any other kind of attention-based asset, but this is what happens when an attention asset's in the sweet spot. And I think like these guys just have it right now. So, does it continue from here? Like, it's always hard to know that. If I knew that, I'd be a lot richer than I am right now. But I think like just the narrative spinning and ETH narrative spun a year and a half ago. And I actually don't think this is all that much different. It's just, this is the one that's in the sweet spot right now.
So I'd love to know how you think about the NFT asset class over the next year to a year and a half, whether it's Ordinals, ETH, NFT, Solana, anything, right? So let me just give you a scenario. Let's say this cycle plays out similar to previous cycles. We're going into the Bitcoin halving next month, which if we look at previous cycles implies that we're actually insanely early in this cycle, no exaggeration. So let's say it's 15 months from now. Let's say Bitcoin's trading over 2x where it's at now. It's at $140,000. Everyone on the news is like, holy shit, this Bitcoin thing is really cooking. We got ETH ETF approved, right? ETH's trading at $8,000-$9,000. Holy shit. New all-time high on Ethereum. This is crazy. Solana, that's the third asset everybody talks about. It's really pumping. It's north of $500. This is nuts. What a crazy time to be alive. Blur or no blur, perverse incentives or no incentives, what do you think happens to the NFT market in a scenario like that where retail is actually here? Bitcoin's over 100 grand. It's playing out the way that we think. ETF inflows for both Bitcoin and Ethereum are insane. What does the NFT market look like then?
I mean, look, one thing I've always said is that this idea that ETH goes up and NFTs go down is a myth. I just don't think there's a lot of data. Like, I think that there have been cycles where that's been true, but broadly on the whole, the biggest Ordinal rally was when Bitcoin was pumping. Yeah. The biggest Solana NFT rally was when Solana was pumping. The biggest ETH NFT rally was when ETH was pumping. Yep. You can go back to when CryptoPunks were making a name for themselves. The Pudgy Penguins rally we just saw was when ETH was rallying. So I always get annoyed when my timeline, like if things go down, people are like, oh, that's just because ETH is up. I'm like, wait, like that has zero consistency with the data over time. Yes, there are periods where that tends to be true, but it's not consistent. Now, one thing that's been unique about this rally compared to the COVID rally is that this has all been like ETF driven, yeah, and there aren't that many more degens. So like, even like I my view of the Ordinal rally, I don't think this is Bitcoin people suddenly saying, whoa, I like JPEGs.
Right.
I think this is JPEG people saying, I like those JPEGs more than my old JPEGs.
It is.
Like, this idea that suddenly like all of Bitcoin maxis are suddenly going to like JPEGs, even though they rejected CryptoPunks, but they actually like JPEGs on their own chain. I just think I don't think that's necessarily true.
Well, one thing on that, Sam, just to pause right there, I totally agree with you. However, there is a cohort of Bitcoiners that, and Clemente knows who I'm talking about. There's a cohort of Bitcoiners who have a progressive view on the whole space, but are definitely, I would say, maximalist. Like, they don't hold Ethereum. They don't hold Solana. They are Bitcoin people, but they are supportive of building in the space, including building on Bitcoin. And when Ordinals came out, they were like all in on ordinals because it's on-chain JPEGs on Bitcoin. So I do know people that have like literally $4 million worth of Bitcoin NFTs that have been in Bitcoin since 2013 that have tens of millions of dollars of Bitcoin. That does exist, but it's not like, it's not a mass population of those folks. So I do agree with you.
And did those people ever own a JPEG before? Or are they
because they weren't on chain. Because they weren't on chain. They were like, and it's not Bitcoin.
Autoglyphs are on chain. I mean, a lot of stuff is on chain.
But it's not on Bitcoin. And so the Bitcoin people, it has to be on Bitcoin. But it's not every Bitcoin whale from 2011 suddenly being like, chips on the table, let's go.
Yeah. Clearly there are a bunch of whales who are all, and I know a couple of them. A couple of them came out and stayed at my house. You know, I have a couple of friends in that community. They came out after East Denver because they live in Colorado, who are deep, just full on. But I think the majority of what I'm seeing, like from the, like, I'm not seeing a ton of people who like never had a PFP and suddenly like Matt, like who are Bitcoin guys who never had a PFP and said like, you know, now I'm rocking a Node Monkey. I find it mainly people who had ETH NFTs and now are rocking the Node Monkey. Regardless though, I think, look, this rally, I just don't think we've seen an increase in degens. The numbers that I've seen don't suggest that I think we've seen degens get richer, get more confident, get more risk on, and deploy capital into new things. So it would be awesome. Like one of my favorite things to do, I do this once every 6 months, is I ask my followers, when did you buy your first NFT or meme coin? And it's still like over 90% were 2022 or earlier. Yeah. Like maybe that's just me because I'm old and, you know, my followers like have been around for a little while, but I just broadly think we're not getting that new degen behavior. But, you know, look, if Bitcoin were to go above 100,000, I think like ordinals continue to rally just the way they did when Bitcoin went from 30 grand to 60 grand, like ordinals rallied as well, you know? And I think like the ultimate bull market for any of this stuff is money comes into the space. People want to lever up that money and it goes into the JPEGs. And we just saw it in Sol and we saw it in ordinals and we saw it in ETH 2 years ago. So I would have to think that if you get this $120,000 Bitcoin thing, like the DGEN community is going to get so pumped and so amped and so risk on that DGEN assets will pump as well.
Well, they'll get pumped when it goes up to 120. Then when it corrects from 120 to 108, they're going to say it's over. But real quick,
other thing I'd throw in though is I think one of the signs of strength here is that, you know, we just had a pretty sharp drawdown in Bitcoin and ordinals stayed strong. I mean, you're right. Like we're at a price now that would be crazy to even like 2 months ago, but we did just have a pretty strong drawdown and, you know, ordinal prices haven't cared.
Ordinals is a very interesting NFT market. So look, moving on to like the art side, the fine art side of NFTs, right? So you have a squiggle behind you. You have a CryptoPunk, obviously. There's so many collections, Fidenzas. There's all these different collections. You know, I look at a guy like DC Investor, right? Great follow on Twitter if you're looking to follow somebody. That's someone that's a huge, huge, huge fan of Ethereum, and he's a huge, huge fan of Ethereum fine art NFTs. I've been wondering about, you know, what the future truly is for Ethereum fine art NFTs and also what the actual execution risk is. Because a lot of people say there isn't an execution risk, but I'd argue with ArtBlocks, there's actually a certain degree of execution risk when you kind of look at like a Chromie squiggle. I think that, you know, Fidenza, you're kind of just taking Tyler Hobbs as a fine artist at, you know, at face value. And you're just saying, well, this guy's going to go down as one of the most important artists of this generation. It might take 20 years, blah, blah, blah. But I'm wondering what you make of the current climate for Ethereum fine art NFTs. It seems like we're still not even close to the traditional art world coming en masse. They still don't get it. Nobody really gets it, to be honest, including people in crypto. Nobody really gets this NFT stuff. So, I mean, what do you make of the Ethereum fine art market or any fine art market within NFTs for that matter?
It's been a cold market for art. Like is just extremely cold. And I think you're right. I think there are a couple projects like Fidenzas that just have like people just artistically love Fidenzas. I think there are a handful of like real whales that have big bags and want to keep accumulating them. I mean, you have a couple anonymous buyers who've been out there buying this stuff slowly, but a ton of art supply was dropped. Like ArtBlocks did new drops, you know, I think like three times a week for like 2 years. it really
expensive
was.
Drops too.
Yeah, and they were expensive. And I think they're like, that was the object of attention. That was the nightclub that had the long lines. And at that time, but it's not right now, you know? And I think There's so, and when you go from all that attention to not being having attention, there's just so much supply out there that wants liquidity. So I think I think what we're kind of seeing in Art Blocks is there are like 10 projects, you know, Chromy Squiggles, Fidenzas, Archetypes, you know, Meridians, Anti-Cyclones, Memories of Qilin, that I think like have kind of risen above and been seen like as the, you know, I think as the ones that like stand out from all that supply. And I think that those will continue to be relevant. But even for that, like, it's hard. And I think there's not a lot of attention there. And there's, even for those, there's a fair bit of supply. So I don't know. It's one of the other things about when people say, like, there's no utility. The utility is the art. The utility is the project. One of the problems is it becomes harder to get attention back onto your object. The reason this utility exists is because people realize that attention travels elsewhere very, very quickly. And if you commit to doing things over time, you can bring attention back. And with some of the stuff where the promise is like the art is the art and that's it. When the attention's gone, you don't really have like much to sway it back. And it just has to be narrative building over time. And it's hard to say how narratives are going to form over time, but I don't know. I own one Chromy Squiggle. I actually own one Harvest, because that's one of the artworks that I really love, and I want to get the print on my wall, and it kind of reminds me of Colorado. So those are the two I own. So I've kind of seen, you know, just how supplies come to market, and it can be pretty tough. But it's hard to say. I have to imagine that at some point, you know, it'll come back. But I don't know what that catalyst is. I don't know what it is that like gets the attention back in that direction, and we'll have to see.
I think I just think it's going to take so long for people to understand this stuff. People in crypto don't understand it. The biggest names in crypto don't understand the NFT stuff. I'd go as far to say that over 75%, maybe even over 80% of like quote crypto Twitter is not in on NFTs. I was having a conversation with Spencer about this because during the bear market, when Spencer was buying everything for so much money, there were moments where I was like, geez, man, you really are, that's like a humongous bet, right? Because it's a bet for the near future. It's not a bet for like 10 years from now. He's running a fund, right? He has to have returns for his investors in a relatively short period of time, right? I mean, maybe not a year or less, but at least 1 to 2 years. And I was just surprised. People in crypto aren't in on NFTs still. So how could we ever expect someone from outside? When Nick went on Dave Portnoy's show, one of the first things Portnoy said was, are NFTs still a thing? I thought those things were dead. One of my in real life friends that makes hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, he's a successful person, 3, 4, 5 months ago, said, is Bitcoin still a thing? People don't understand this stuff at all. How can we expect JPEGs to have all this liquidity when even people in our industry don't understand them?
Well, look, I mean, look, all you have to see is how many people hate Bored Apes. Like the amount of venom, the amount of, schadenfreude or whatever, towards Bored Apes is so over the top. Like crypto people, a lot of crypto people like not just don't understand, like adamantly dislike it.
Right. Right.
You know, one thing I will say is I live in a town that doesn't even have a high school. It's that small of a town. We have one gas station, one expensive grocery store, and my town has more residents than there are owners of CryptoPunks. You don't need a ton of people, you know, just like there aren't a ton of people who love expensive wine. There aren't a ton of people who love expensive watches, but those asset classes have held over time. And I think over time, more people will end up like feeling connection to these objects. But I think it's not quick, and you don't need that many, to be honest, to feel that FOMO, because these aren't exactly massive markets. You do need that many to hold up all the supply that's been created. But I think the stuff that stands out. The other thing I'll say, though, just because I have to say this because this happened yesterday. I had a friend who sent me this pitch thing for something he wanted me to invest in or something like that. And the first line is, we are the first restaked L2 on EigenLayer for on-chain reputation in a modular L2 using Arbitrum Orbit powered by EigenDA with alt layer restake rollups that earn you restaking rewards. And I said, he kept-
What a like, one-liner.
He said, what do you think? I said, Leon, this is fucking unreadable. Like, it's not just NFTs that people don't understand. Like, all this shit people don't understand. That's just like, I think not understanding is almost like a feature, not a bug of crypto. It makes it like feel elusive and mysterious and gives people FOMO for something they don't understand.
Well, I recommend it. So like a month ago, I threw on season 1 of Silicon Valley. I watched that show back in the day. It's the Mike Judge show on HBO. It's got like Thomas Middleditch or whatever. If you guys comment, maybe you can pull up a screenshot of Silicon Valley. Everyone that's in crypto now should go and watch the first season of Silicon Valley, because it's so funny. And that what you just said, that pitch, is basically a joke in the very first episode, where it's like, we are changing the world from scalable security solutions on the back. Like, you know what I mean? Like this whole technical one-liner that nobody understands. And it's a joke there. And someone literally presented it to you dead serious yesterday, it sounds like, Sam. Super duper funny. Silicon Valley, great watch. Look, we're going to throw to Tony in just a few minutes. Tony from Shrapnel. But last thing with Sam, and Sam, we appreciate you joining us today. You got a new job. You left Proof and you have a kick-ass new job over at Memeland with our buddy Ray Chan. What's the story there? What's going on?
Dude, well, first of all, on Silicon Valley, my two jobs, I worked at Goldman Sachs for 8 years and Uber for 8 years. So like
being the Uber side, yeah.
Being Uber while Silicon Valley was going on, it was like you saw your life in every scene. And it was hilarious. First of all, for background, I lived in Hong Kong for 15 years. And Ray Chan has been a friend of mine since before NFTs existed. Like, you know, back when I was launching Uber in Asia, he was doing 9GAG. And, you know, he's been a friend. And I went back to visit family because my kids were all born in Hong Kong. And I connected with him. And we had lunch like six times. And, you know, after all those lunches, I was like, yeah, let's fucking do it. And I decided to join Memeland. Look, it's an incredible, like the team, it's one of the only projects that's successfully gone from web 2 to web 3. Like Pio, you're always talking about alternative revenue streams and how you have to have all these other ways to make money and be a business.
If you have
like,
a business,
Memeland is the alternative revenue stream. Like it literally, like it is just, it was the experiment that came out of 9GAG. Like my emails at 9GAG, like the Memeland business is fully funded by 9GAG at this point. It's gonna separate. But what that means is that all the money they've made off royalties, off mints, off everything remains on chain. They haven't taken any money and not a single ETH has come off chain. So they have a lot of ETH to deploy to build the business, a lot of ETH to invest. Memecoin has done incredibly well, I think, relative to expectations. Obviously, it goes up and it goes down, but it's a multi-billion dollar token. We want to use the money that's on balance sheet to invest more. To kind of create launchpad advisory type services for projects and distribute all the returns from that to Memecoin. So the goal is really to like make Memecoin kind of the hub of all these other businesses that I think the talent at the company can build. So I don't know, I've had a great time. There's a guy named Char on the team who's just got crazy level of hustle and some of the best energy I've ever worked with in my life. I think Ray, you know, he just really understands NFTs in a deep way. He understands communication around NFTs. Really fun guy to work with. And it's like a small, scrappy team, but we're looking for projects to invest in. We're looking for advisory type work to do. We'll be hiring more, but there's a lot to do there, but it's been a lot of fun. Very, very different from Moonbirds, I will say that.
Projects to invest in. Are you guys doing equity investments?
We're doing everything. And the goal is all to kind of like funnel returns into Memecoin and to Memecoin holders and people who stake. So it's like that. And to be honest, none of us get paid well if Memecoin does poorly. The company hasn't sold any Memecoin. I talked to our market maker. In order to get listed on Binance, you have to have market makers because like Binance doesn't let you list if the bid-ask spread's very wide. And I said, what's it like to work with Memeland? And they start laughing. They say, it's the only client we have that doesn't sell when things pump. Like everyone else is constantly selling their own token. Whereas these guys, like the one transaction that Memeland did was buying Memecoin, you know, when it was down, you know, so they believe in what they're doing. They're incentive aligned with holders, which is important to me. We will sell Memecoin at some point. Like that's certainly, it's not a commitment to never do it, but I think like ultimately we have to fund some stuff that we're doing, but net, like, I don't know. There's so many like sketchy people in this space that I just know Ray's not like that. And he was someone I wanted to work with.
Well, he's a decade long operator that, like you said, has a good understanding of the space. I believe when you talk about those market makers, they were coined as the Binance Mafia by Beanie, very eloquently put there by Beanie. Sorry, I just want to say that because I get a kick out of Beanie's takes. Look, Sam, been too long. Thanks so much for joining, man. Congrats on the new job. Great, great performance today. Really appreciate you coming on.
Dude, I drank my coffee, so I talk a lot. So I'm sorry to everyone who's like, dude, you talk too much. But no, dude, I always love kicking it with you guys. So Clemente has become the professor of Twitter, dude. I feel like I'm getting like a glimpse into his soul every time I read his tweets. MPO, you guys are going from win to win. So great to get to hang.
Absolutely, man. And no need to apologize. We want you to talk. That's why you come on the show. Thanks so much, Sam. Catch you next time. Check out Sam on Twitter, ladies and gentlemen. Punk9059. That's Punk9059 is the handle. Congrats on the new job, Sam. We will catch you next time. Ladies and gentlemen, we're joined by one of our favorite guests to have on the show. Dare I say, he's also a fan favorite of sorts. Every time this guy comes on, he gets a positive reaction from the audience. I'm assuming he's coming live from San Francisco today. We got Tony V of Shrapnel fame. Tony, what's going on, amigo? You're muted, buddy.
How's it going, guys? Sorry, I was just unmuting. I'm at the Wolves Den Shrapnel House here at GDC. We're having a blast. I've been hanging out with Easy for the last couple of days. He was over last night. I actually think he was here up later than me. I had to tuck myself in so I didn't miss this again. But we're having a blast here. We had like 100 people here the last couple of nights, just hanging out, playing video games. Sinjin from my angry Yakuza girlfriend made like 100 pounds of Korean barbecue for everyone last night. It was just awesome. Super dope. And we've been playing video games. We start our STX session today from 10 to 6. We are giving out the Bodago's skateboards, and let me tell you, they are the belle of the ball. They are the most popular merch here by a whole lot.
Oops.
And
Yeah,
it's great. I'm not gonna lie, it's great. So I'm gonna be giving those away on stage tomorrow at the Avalanche booth from GDC. Let me tell you, the Avalanche booth, Coop is a fucking maniac, dude. Like I had like seen mock-ups, but I hadn't really internalized what it was gonna be like when you go into GDC. There's like, it's a big fucking convention center. There's booths everywhere. There's, signs hanging and shit. And it's what the 70s thought the future was going to be, right? There's fucking screens everywhere and lights, just sensory overload. But when you go down the escalator, it's just this like great view. It's like almost like a skyline. And as you're going down the escalator, there's a giant sign that says Web3 gaming sucks. And that's the fucking Avalanche booth. And I mean, it's great. Like it is like, as someone who's been coming to these events for 20 years, you just don't see shit like that, like at all. Right. And so it just immediately jumps out to you. I'm like fucking stoked, dude. I think it's going to be great. I think people are going to come and check out the booth just because it's like such a statement. Right. So we'll be there all day tomorrow. Easy's going to stream from the booth. I'm going to be carnival barking and shooting t-shirts out of cannons and giving people skate decks. But yeah, we're having a blast, man.
Web3 gaming sucks. Very punk rock. Also, sorry I had to do it to you, GDC, with those skate decks. Very pumped to hear about their reception, Tony. Tony, can we see the Bodago's tattoo? Can we see it? There it is.
Down. Well, there we go. Look at that.
There we go.
There we go. Look at that guy.
Very, very dope, Tony. That's so awesome, man.
I carry Easy Eats around with me everywhere I go. He's a dog on the internet. He's a dog on my arm.
I don't know if that's specifically Easy's dog there on your arm, but yeah, it's definitely the Shrapnel Bodago's dog. Well, look, this is a huge, huge, huge week for you guys. Obviously, we just talked about you being at the GDC conference in San Francisco. You guys are launching STX 2.0, which is going to, as I talked about earlier, it's going to include the launch of the Shrapnel Marketplace and the launch of 20 tradable weapon skins that are purchasable using the Shrap token. Can you give us a high-level overview for this week for you guys from a Shrapnel perspective, the marketplace, the skins, everything that's happening?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for teeing that up for me, man. It's a big week for us. We're really excited. As PO noted, I think today, it's either today or tomorrow, and pay attention to Twitter, keep your notifications on. We'll let you know. We're doing some testing right now, but we'll push the marketplace live and you'll be able to start buying premium skins. There's 20 of them launching. I think they look pretty dope. Here's a quick video that kind of shows most of them off. We've been working on these for a little while. The purchasable skins are all of these are NFTs, and this first version of the marketplace you can buy from us. In a couple of weeks, you'll be able to start selling to other people. And when we release the ability to start selling to other people, this first round of skins will actually come off of the marketplace and go into a vault. And so you have like between now and then to accumulate how many of whatever skin you want that you think you might want to hold or sell or trade to other people if you think they look cool. But like the koi skin, for example, the thing with the fish on it there, like that's only going to be available for like a couple of weeks, right? And then we might re-release it in the future. But So, you know, I'm super excited about that. I'm excited to see what people do. Like, I've gotten a bunch of feedback like, hey, you probably should only have let people buy like two or three Matt Max per account, because then they'd speculate more. And I've had other people tell me the opposite. They're like, you should let people buy as many as they want, so the market can decide how they're going to speculate. And so I went with the latter, right? I just let people buy whatever the fuck they want and see what happens. And we're going to do, I don't know if I'm allowed to use this word, but I'm going to, we're going to do some like market making on the back end, where like if people list skins for not a lot of money, we'll just buy them and put them in a vault and use them for giveaways and shit. But we're talking to a company called Lava about that right now, if anyone knows who those guys are. But anyway, we're like super excited about this skins marketplace launch. And then in the game, we're launching the ability to actually equip those skins. So like you can use those things and kill people with them and show them off. We'll also be airdropping partner skins to people over the next couple of weeks. So we'll make an announcement today that we have partner skins with Superverse, which is LEO Trade's project. We'll be launching a shotgun with them. Avalanche, we'll be launching a shotgun with them. Our partner Alchemy, they're making a Discord game for us. Actually, it's like a little RPG that's set in the Shrapnel universe. Super dope. There's an AR shotgun and pistol skin from their group. You'll get the shotgun with this coming drop. Bodagos have the Buddy's Revenge pistol. It's got Buddy on it. And when you slap Buddy's tongue, it releases the mag and you reload. It's fucking beautiful. So if you're a Bodagos holder or an operator holder, you'll figure out how to get those in this upcoming announcement. And then we're working with Neo Tokyo as well. So we'll have a Neo Tokyo themed skin. And then if you're a project listening to this, and you're like, oh, that sounds cool, I want to skin in Shrapnel, please reach out. We're happy to get you in the pipeline. We really want to work with as many projects as possible. So that'll happen this week. And then there's just like a whole bunch of updates. If you go through our Twitter, we'd share some stuff. But like we have a side by side of the map updates, and we've made a bunch of changes, not just to like the look and feel of the map. Like there's a diner or like a lobby area that before was all gray box and is now like looks like the lobby of the Shibuya Square. Brutalize that name, train station lobby. And so like people that are living in this city like have gone into the map and be like, holy shit, that like actually looks like the lobby of the train station. Yeah, here you go, you got the side by side here. And the dance club actually looks like a dance club now and has like, you know, ravey lights in it and shit. So we're, you know, just a lot of new updates coming in STX2. I think for people who have been playing STX1 and 1.1 and 1.2, will feel like they're playing a different game. You know, there's a new weapon, the SMG, there's a new attachment, the suppressor. So, it, you know, makes your gun less likely to be heard when you're firing. And then the quality of life improvements just keep getting better. So like hit registration, hit markers, like I'm sure I'm not supposed to use that word either. We don't have hit markers, but like the ability to know when you're hitting someone because blood's coming off their body or whatever, just like the visual indicators, I guess, is the better way to think about it, are getting better and better. The sound is just getting dope. We've really onboarded a couple of new sound engineers over the last couple of months. They've just really stepped up the way that the sound works in the game. So yeah, that's like the real, I just rambled for like 5 minutes. I'm sorry, but that's what's coming out in STX2. I'm like super excited about it. And again, it's 10 o'clock a.m. to 6 o'clock p.m. today, tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday. We will have daily leaderboards. God, there's so many changes, so much shit happening, guys. I will have daily leaderboards for this round. So every day there will be a new set of 1,000 people who can extract Sigma from the game. And those top 1,000 people who extract the most Sigma will receive a payout in Trap Token relative to their rank. So like the first prize gets the most all the way through the 1,000th person. So we're really excited. LE.jpg.jpg. I saw you'd love to see games being built in the open like this. Like, you know, it's scary as shit, I'm not gonna lie. Because we get a lot of the opposite feedback that's like, fuck you, this isn't a video game yet. But it is a lot of fun, right? And it's cool to do stuff like this at GDC. Like, it really re-energizes the team, in my opinion. Because you just get a lot of people that are, you know, hands-on with the game and really excited about it and excited to share it. And you get real honest feedback. Like, Cairo is brutal. Like he has like a fucking 7-page document that he just dumps into every time he plays STX with like everything from very high level feedback, like the art could be better, to like it takes 2.5 seconds longer than it should to throw a grenade, shit like that. Right. And so like I feel very fortunate to be building in public. I feel very fortunate to have such a great community of people that are really excited about playing our game and helping us make it better. Love to hear from folks like you.
Well, it's incredible to be able to get that real-time feedback from notable people like Cairo, you know, people that are in the gaming world. I share the same opinion as Ellie, is that I think it's super cool to kind of literally build a game in public and be able to offer people ownership of in-game assets throughout the whole journey. It's super cool. I'm also excited to play a playtest soon. I won't be able to play today's because I don't have the gaming PC yet, but we're getting me a gaming PC. Yeah. Nick has a gaming PC. Easy's got a gaming PC. So I'm literally, and by the way, last time when we did the playtest, there was so much lag. That's why I wasn't just absolutely demolishing people. I'm going to go on record right now. I think I'm going to be just getting kills on easy. Getting kills on Nick goes without saying. I mean, that's light work. That's easy money. But I think that people are going to be surprised that I'm going to be just getting headshots on easy while we play the game. Really
excited
about
that. I see the shotgun motion there too. I see where you, yeah. I like that.
Anyway, Tony, I'm very excited for that. So look, what else should people know? If they're in NorCal, they should pull up. But obviously, the majority of our audience is not in Northern California. Clemente?
Yeah, I had a question actually on the marketplace, Tony. So you're starting with 20 skins that are being tradable. You're the ones selling them. If I'm not, like, people aren't getting them, like, it's not user based. I can't sell one. I'm not getting one yet. It's just from Shrapnel to users, right?
Correct.
But that's not going to be the case necessarily in the future.
In like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, like, or maybe a little bit longer than that, but it's like in April, people will be able to take the skins that they bought from us and start selling them to other people. So as we, you know, right now we've got like, I don't know, like 25, 30,000 people who come play the game every STX in that range. And it goes up by, you know, 10,000 new people, 'cause we see a shitload of churn every time. And so, you know, again, if you imagine that our game is going to be a million user game in a year, which, God, I hope it is, it'll be fucking sitting pretty. Then these, like, owning 10,000 or owning one or 10 or 15 of these skins, of which there are only like 10 or 15,000, will probably be valuable, right? And so that is the mental math we think that people are going to be doing when they're buying from the marketplace. Is like the koi skin is I think the most attractive skin right now that is not a partner skin. I will be going and buying a bunch of the koi skins with the expectation that in the future people will want to buy those koi skins from me because they won't be available again.
And that's through the Shrap token, right? You can only buy it with the Shrap token, which, correct, by the way, was just listed on crypto.com last week.
That's right. And so if you are in North America, you now have access to the Shrap token via crypto.com. And there's a if you go into your Shrapnel account and you go to your inventory, there's actually a little button that says transfer in and transfer out. And that's just how you bridge your Shrap in so that you can then use it on the Shrapnel marketplace. And we won't be, but our partner Radon, the foundation that owns the Shrap token, they'll be releasing some how-to videos with a couple of KOLs on how to do that with, like, you know, screenshots of here's press the button and move the Shrap and then buy the thing.
Hell yeah. Well, Tony, is there anything else people should know about the present or future of Shrapnel? Obviously, you guys are having a great time out there. I see all the tweets coming out, all the pictures. It's great to see. Excited to see Easy play the game from out there. But anything else people need to know about Shrapnel right now or in the near future?
All right. Yeah, I will share some, like, super alpha at the end of the call here. So the two things that I would note are, we are going to be releasing a system in the near future, again, probably April or May, that allows people to buy what we call dossiers, which are packs of missions, like get X kills, get X Sigma, do X, Y, Z, whatever, like do stuff in the game. And those dossiers will cost Shrap token to buy. Initially, they will emit over time more Shrap token than you put into them based on your completing the missions and all that stuff. You will be able to, like most mobile or free-to-play games, be able to speed up your missions or just, like, pay to complete them. And so, like ideally, if you want, like, you just, like, pull up a spreadsheet and, like, just, like, never play the game and just pay your way through a bunch of dossier missions if you want to, with the idea being that over time, we will shift the mix of rewards from just token to in-game and token, such that the intrinsic value of the items being rewarded through dossiers are more gameplay related than token related. But initially, it'll be solely focused on the token. So that's going to happen in the next, like, you know, month and a half or so. And again, those will cost Shrap to to buy. And so our idea again with that is that it'll give people, right now we feel like we lack a mechanism for people who really want to show conviction in the project to do so in a meaningful way beyond just like buying and holding the token. And so we're going to be looking on into creating new mechanisms like this dossier tool for those folks. And then I think more significantly, all that stuff that I just talked about with the dossier tool, like the ability to create an off-chain questing system that looks like a battle pass that you pay, so you pay an on-chain currency to activate, and then that emits an on-chain reward. Like that whole process, again, taking an on-chain token, giving someone an off-chain entitlement that then rewards on-chain, all that stuff takes a bunch of shit in the back end to do. And we've productized all that into a product called Mercury. It is like the element or the planet is how it's spelled. However, the head of our blockchain is named Mark Mercury. He's also the former head of blockchain for Microsoft. So it's a little hat tip, nod to him. He's a great guy. And so we'll be releasing that this year, and there will be a token associated with that. I can't talk a whole lot about it other than there'll be a Shrap mechanism to acquire that. So, you know, if you're interested in like infrastructure as a concept or as a thesis, we have the person who created the blockchain infrastructure for Microsoft and then went on to Consensus and helped Microsoft become lead investors there and is now working for us to build our platform. And we'll be releasing products around that over the next year. So that's like the super alpha. Can't wait for people to learn more about that shit. We have a whole bunch of people. One of the things we're doing here at GDC is like getting LOIs from people who want to use the tool. And so we're excited to roll out all that stuff. You guys are the first to hear it on a Spaces, I think.
Incredible. Also love Seattle represent. You got Microsoft people. You just have a deep squad out there in the Pacific Northwest. And the level of talent is awesome, man. I mean, we've talked about the level of talent that the game creators have, you know, the previous titles that they've worked on. It's very exciting stuff to see this get built in public. I have one last question, Tony. When are we getting a sniper rifle? When am I just going to snipe easy from like miles away? When's that going to happen?
Sorry, what was the question?
When are we going to get a sniper rifle? Whoa. He's lagging out. Ladies and gentlemen, he's lagging out.
Probably come, you know.
Back. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So did you guys get that?
Yeah, we got it. We got it, Tony. Thank you for the response, buddy.
Yeah, I got you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got Tony from Shrapnel on the show today. Make sure that you check out Shrapnel. Go to the nifty.com/Shrapnel to buy extraction packs. We already talked about that as a call to action if you want to get involved with STX 2.0. If you're in NorCal, obviously check out GDC. But regardless, the Shrapnel Marketplace is about to launch where you can buy tradable weapon skins using the Shrap token. Tony, we always love having you on. Love learning about Shrapnel. Can't wait for the next playtest. Can't wait to whip Nick and Easy's ass in said playtest. Thanks so much for joining, man. And yeah, we really appreciate the partnership with Shrapnel.
We love you guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, Tony. Have a good time over there. See you, man.
Yeah. See ya.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's our show. Yeah, we'll be back tomorrow. The show happens Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern time. If it's your first time listening, check out the show across platforms. That's Twitter Spaces Audio, Apple and Spotify Podcasts. If you want to listen to it on the go, listen to it at 1.225x or share it with somebody outside of the Twitter bubble. Check it out on YouTube or X Video if you actually want to see the video stream, get all the visuals along with the conversation, see our beautiful faces while we run it. Anyway, we will be back tomorrow with another action-packed show. Hope you guys enjoyed it, and we will catch you next time. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back tomorrow. See you later.